Yesterday was the 2-year anniversary of the Boston Marathon bombings. Sunday will be the anniversary of the manhunt through Watertown that shut down most of Greater Boston. After a shootout that took the life of Tamerlan Tsarnaev, it would take authorities another 20 hours to apprehend his brother, Jahar. It was confusing and chaotic. And even today, WBUR's Bruce Gellerman finds inconsistencies in accounts of what happened. Bruce has been piecing together a timeline of events and joins us this morning to talk about it. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning, Bob.
Bruce, you live in Watertown and were one of the first reporters on the scene that night. Tell us first a bit about your hometown, Watertown.
Well, technically, it's a city and a great place to live. We've been there over 20 years, and it used to be sort of a secret sleepy suburb. Relatively low taxes, it's richly diverse, terrific schools. But now if you go anywhere in the world, Bob, you don't have to say you're from Boston. People know Watertown because what happened April 19th, 2013.
All right, 2 years later, we have the evidence presented at Jahar Tsarnaev's trial. Also, the after-action report released this month by state emergency management officials, but there are still unanswered questions about what happened.
Oh, yeah, there are. This is one of the biggest events in our history, and I really think we should get it right. Now, you mentioned the after-action report. Actually, it was written over a year ago, but only made public this month. The thing is, it's the official state report of what happened, but it gets some important details wrong, and some things are simply left out.
For example, what'd they get wrong?
Well, first off, the state report says Tamerlan is declared dead at 1:06 in the morning, but his death certificate says it's 1:35 a.m. Or take Danny. He's the man carjacked in his Mercedes SUV. The report says the carjacking took place at 11:19 p.m. in Alston. Well, it couldn't have been at 11:19 at night because during Jahar Tsarnaev's trial, a Bank of America vice president testifies that's exactly when Tsarnaev was videotaped at the Watertown Square ATM using Danny's debit card. So clearly those details aren't correct.
Well, there's a time discrepancy there, but in the big picture, is it a big deal?
Well, you know, timelines are critically important tools for investigators, reporters like myself, and historians. So we build them to make sure that events and evidence and testimony are consistent. So I decided to construct an audio timeline from the shootout right through the manhunt using information from the trial, state reports and official documents, the police scanners, resident videos, and a lot of interviews. I started at precisely 12:19 a.m.
So that's 1 hour after Jahar uses the ATM in Watertown?
Right. But after leaving Watertown, they go to Cambridge to get gas for the SUV. And during the trial, there's video evidence of Jahar buying stuff inside the Shell station. And Danny, whose real name is Dun Meng, he bolts the vehicle and runs across the street to another gas station.
There's an attendant in the store, so I beg him to call 911. The police arrive very quickly.
The Cambridge police dispatcher issues a bolo, ordering officers to be on the lookout for the Mercedes SUV and the kidnappers. It's 12:26 a.m.
Suspects are 2 Middle Eastern males, one's 5'7", second one was darker skinned, no description on clothing yet. Both were armed with firearms, 137 Nora Zulu 1.
Using the Mercedes onboard location service, police track the SUV to Watertown. It's 12:41 a.m.
And now the vehicle's moving now, units.
I saw the Mercedes, and you know, I radioed dispatch. I'm like, I have the vehicle that we're looking for.
Watertown police officer Joe Reynolds is the first cop to spot the SUV. He turns and follows it. A Honda Civic is in front. The suspects drive down Dexter Ave. Another Watertown officer, Sergeant John McClellan, night shift supervisor, goes after the cars too.
I'm right behind that vehicle. Yeah, let me catch up to you and then light him up.
12:44 a.m. The SUV and Honda turn onto Laurel, go halfway down the street, and suddenly stop at number 66. It's the home of Jennings Askey.
I was woken to what I thought were firecrackers, and I saw a tall man shooting down the street, shooting a handgun.
He lifts his arm up and he starts shooting at my cruiser.
Watertown Patrol Officer Joe Reynolds.
And could hear the bullets going off the hood, one that got lodged in the bottom of the windshield.
I hear the pop, pop, pop.
Again, Sergeant John McClellan.
Shots fired.
Shots
fired. Shots fired.
I take a round right through the windshield, right through my headrest of my driver's side.
McClellan jumps from his vehicle and lets it roll forward, drawing fire from Tamerlan. The tactics the Watertown police use that night, they don't teach in cop school.
You know, in America, this has never, ever happened in the history of the United States, ever. No officers have ever taken bombs thrown at them in a gunfight.
These are real bombs, real bullets, and it's happening in real time. Watertown police officers Miguel Colon and Jeff Pugliese are next on the scene. Sergeant Pugliese is the department's sharpshooter. He puts on a bulletproof vest, jumps backyard fences, and testifies in court that he trades shots with Tamerlan Tsarnaev from 6 to 8 feet away. When Tsarnaev runs out of bullets, Officer Pugliese tackles him in the street. Again, Sergeant John McClellan.
My only thought at that point was, this guy's throwing bombs at us. He's either got another one or his brother's got a button. As soon as we get on him, he's going to blow us up. I'm like, no way. You know, I'm the supervisor of this guy. I can't let this guy go by himself. I got to help him. So I jump on top.
From her home on Laurel Street, Lizzie Floyd watches Jahar Tsarnaev escape in the Mercedes as police wrestle Tamerlan to the ground.
I saw him back up the SUV, gunning down the street, and I saw him run right over his brother and, like, saw the car go, like, like that. It was pretty nuts. I was worried there was a cop there, too, but I guess they got out of the way.
I go, Jeff, here he comes, watch out. I push off the body. He pushes off the body, and the brother runs, misses both of us, and runs over his brother. He gets caught up underneath the car, hits up one of our cruisers, and releases the body. He continues through the intersection. At that time, there was officers from different agencies responding. When the vehicle went through the intersection, some of them took shots at the vehicle.
266 shots were fired on Laurel Street. At the trial, a state trooper testifies 56 shell casings were from the Tsarnaev's P-95 Ruger. It's the same gun used to kill MIT officer Sean Collier. Police cruisers from at least five different departments race down Dexter Ave into the intersection with Laurel Street. I'm hit, cries MBTA officer Dick Donahue. Earlier that night, he was a first responder at MIT, where his best friend, Officer Sean Collier, was shot and killed. Donahue was also one of the first on the scene in Watertown.
111, the smoke came off, officer down. Hazel and Dexter.
The bullet that hits Donahue is undoubtedly friendly fire, but neither the trial testimony nor the after-action report acknowledge that. Then, at exactly the same time Donahue is hit, something else happens four blocks north of the shootout.
Adams Street! Adams Street! Adams Street, Watertown!
Adams Street, Watertown, we have it.
An unmarked black state police truck, incorrectly reported stolen, is shot up. 10 bullets riddle the vehicle, occupied by a plainclothes Massachusetts trooper and Boston patrolman. The state report says a police officer fired on the truck, but makes no mention of the bombs.
We've got explosives being detonated.
Copy. Black pickup, Adams Street, Watertown, explosives being detonated.
Adams Street! Adams Street!
Neither officer in the black pickup truck is injured. Police from distant departments hear officer down and self-report. On Laurel Street, seen near the shootout, traffic snarls.
All right, you guys, if I'm not calling out your unit call signs, it's because you're stepping on each other. Keep on trying.
Watertown Fire EMS has trouble reaching Dick Donahue. He's bleeding out.
Where's the rescue? Rescue hold.
Rescue's in
route.
They should be there now.
Police commanders say at least 16 first responders helped save MBTA officer Dick Donahue. He's effectively dead when he reaches Mount Auburn Hospital. Miraculously, he lives.
You know, I've been on the job for 30 years, and it's my proudest day to be in law enforcement.
Edward DeVoe is Watertown's chief of police. His small, cohesive force of officers who know the area and each other brought the shootout to an end in less than 4 minutes. But as out-of-town police flood into Watertown, Jahar Tsarnaev escapes in the SUV. It would take nearly 20 hours to find him.
Why didn't the police chase?
We made our best effort based on what we had at the time and what we knew at the time. Our biggest concern right immediately then, particularly my Watertown officers, was going to the aid of Officer Donahue. He was in bad shape, and the fleeing suspect was second to him. He was our main priority.
Wow. Bruce Gellerman, some incredible bravery there by members of law enforcement. But as we know, Jahar Tsarnaev gets away. We know police were focused on the MBTA officer who was shot, Officer Donahue, but no one went after Jahar and the SUV at that point?
Well, that's the thing, Bob. We later learned from the trial and official documents there was a chase. In fact, there were three chases. And here's something you probably haven't heard before. An off-duty Watertown officer actually blocked Tsarnaev with his car. Tsarnaev stops in the middle of the street and runs away.
So why then did it take so long to find Jahar Tsarnaev that night in the backyard boat?
Well, that's a good question. In fact, there are lots of questions about the manhunt, and I'll have some answers tomorrow.
WBUR's Bruce Gellerman in this morning, and back tomorrow. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.